Earth and Sky.
You're listening to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science podcast. Michael Pollan is a journalist and author best known for his book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. He's often called the guru of good food. In his latest book, In Defense of Food, An Eater's Manifesto, he writes about the way nutrition science has transformed the American diet.
So my first question is just about your idea of eating scientifically, which was a new idea I'd never really heard about before I read your book. And can you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, Americans have been obsessed with this idea that there might be a scientifically appropriate way to eat for actually quite a long time. You find people using the phrase scientific eating back in the 1860s and 70s. That there might be something that would guide us in our food choices that would, you know, lead us to the most nutritious food away from the bad nutrients and toward the good nutrients. So this is an old idea in America. It's in worldwide terms, however, it's a very new idea because people normally have not turned to science to tell them how to eat. They've had culture to tell them how to eat. Now, culture is just a fancy word for your mom. You know, you ate what your parents ate and what their parents ate and what their parents ate. But in America, that was never quite good enough. We were always looking for some scientific authority to tell us how to eat, perhaps because we didn't have a single, you know, unified food culture. We had so many different food cultures on America because we were a nation of immigrants. So we've turned to science where other cultures have turned to culture.
So in your book, you're kind of tracking the way that this has come down into really making it only an option for us to eat this way. And do you think that that has in a way ruined our diet?
Well, in some ways, there's a lot of things that have ruined our diet. I mean, food manufacturers deserve a lot of the blame for ruining our diet, fast food chains. But they like scientific eating because if you're making processed foods, you can always rejigger the food to follow the latest science. So if fat is the great evil, you can make all your no-fat products. And if carbs are the great evil, you can make low-carb pasta and low-carb bread. So they're happy to have the constant churn of new scientific theories to help them sell their food. Whatever the nutrients, they're either boosting or diminishing in the food. The fact, you know, remains that we're talking about processed foods. And that the real food, you know, the kinds of foods that your great-grandmother would recognize, the kinds of foods that have been around for hundreds of years, are not making health claims, and they're not getting reformulated to fit the latest fad. And that, by and large, is the food you're best off eating.
But do you think that science has any kind of place in food or food culture?
Nutrition science has taught us a lot. It's just, and I'm not against nutrition science. I'm not against science at all. I just think that we have to have a healthy skepticism about the science, which is to say, it's a very young science. They haven't figured this out yet. They have not plumbed the depths of a carrot to understand what makes a carrot a healthy food. These systems are very complex, both on both ends of the food chain. The foods themselves are very complex systems, and then the human body is a very complex system. So all I'm saying is that nutrition science is still very young, and we've only had it around for about 180 years. And they will figure out, I assume, a lot of these questions that now baffle us about food. But in the meantime, we should recognize that they don't yet know enough to guide us in our food choices, and that we would be better off letting culture guide us in our food choices. And that's what I'm trying to do, is kind of shift the balance of authority a little bit from science to culture when it comes to food.
So what's motivating the kinds of changes that we're seeing today in American food culture?
A couple things. I mean, we have a public health crisis around food. We see obesity all around us. We see heart disease all around us. We see cancer all around us. And we understand, we know that our diet is contributing to these chronic diseases. So that's one thing. This public health crisis is forcing the culture to reexamine its eating habits. Another is the scandals we've had around food in this country. You know, we just recently had this recall of 143 million pounds of beef from a slaughterhouse in Chino, California. Every time we have a scandal like that, and we have had many of those scandals over the last 10 years, 20 years, it peels back the curtain on how our food is being prepared. And people look behind that curtain, and they're revolted and outraged, and they begin to search for alternatives. So I think that that is, you know, driving this change. Concern about public health, the health of our children, the health of our parents, and this sense that there's something wrong with the way the food is being prepared, that we're not, you know, the way we're raising meat, the way we're growing, you know, crops in huge monocultures that require huge amounts of pesticides. We've been learning. We've been getting an education in the industrial food supply, and we don't like what we're seeing.
Do you see organic being something that becomes cheaper so that more people can afford it?
Yeah, organic will get cheaper as the market grows bigger and as the supply rises to meet the demand. However, it will never be as cheap as industrial food. Conventional industrial food, because that food is subsidized in a great many ways that organic food is not subsidized. I mean, we literally subsidize the raw materials, corn and soy, you know, the raw materials of the McDonald's meal, say. Plus, we subsidize in other ways. We subsidize all that cheap meat by not requiring the feedlots to dispose of manure waste properly. If they were required to follow the same rules that we, you know, that a city producing a similar amount of solid waste was required to follow, they would have to build, you know, sewage treatment plants. And if they were, that would increase the cost of cheap meat. So what I'm suggesting is not that these alternatives are so expensive, but that the cheap food is artificially cheap. And so the prices, I think, of the two food chains will come closer together when we begin to pay the real cost of our food.
So what do you think is the first step for someone changing their own food supply? Where should they go?
Try to get out to the supermarket to the extent you can. Go to the farmer's market. Join a CSA. Plant a garden. You know, these are the first steps. And as soon as you do that, you will kind of wake up to the, you know, the beauty of really well-grown produce and the tastefulness of it. And you will, you know, have a better idea where your food comes from. You will be reminded that it takes a farmer to grow it and that these people deserve to be rewarded for the hard and important work of growing food well. And you will take more care with it because it's such, you know, gorgeous stuff that to treat it carelessly in the kitchen seems a crime. So you will start cooking. And cooking real food is really the beginning of health and happiness around food. Because when you cook, you're not going to want to cook just for yourself. You're going to want to cook for other people. So you're going to eat a meal with other people at a table. And that's the beginning of a real revolution in our culture because we're not doing that right now.
And should you be closing your ears to nutritionism and that kind of scientific advice?
Yeah, I think we should really clear our minds of all this biochemistry we're carrying around. You know, people ate perfectly well and very healthily and happily for thousands of years before they knew what an antioxidant was. We don't need to know this to eat well. As long as we eat real food, we don't have to worry that much about the health claims, about the antioxidants, about the fats, about the fiber. Real food, you know, is stuff that has co-evolved with us over hundreds and thousands of years. It has what we need to be healthy. And, you know, you don't need to know the chemical makeup. Let the scientists worry about the biochemistry. Just keep your eye on the real food.
Thanks to Michael Pollan for joining us. You can subscribe to this and other free science podcasts at our website. Just visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Lindsay Patterson for Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science podcast.
We're at earthsky.org.